Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a lot of content to get through. What we're going to do is we're going to cover the ratification debates. I know we kind of glossed over them a few times, and it's time that we really gloss over them again at a minimum. And the reason, and I'll just start this off now, these are the mediations, these are the testimonies, these are the terms and definitions of the Constitution. As we understand, in contract law, whenever the contract is being discussed in detail, those details that are being provided in that testimony to the stakeholders who are buying into that contract, then those terms as testified, though that contract, those clauses within the contract, as they have been defined, become the legally binding definitions, clarifications, whatever you want to call them. I mean, bottom line, these are hard, fast definitions to the Constitution. So what you want to do is, if you're going to miss a part of this show and the next upcoming shows, you're going to want to use the listen line so that you can at least dial in and listen, because we're going to be covering this and we're going to get into the details as to what was stated in the different debates. Why is this important? So that you understand that there was no conflicts, there was no contrary testimony that told one state, oh, we're going to go ahead and grow the government out of control, and that's okay, though, because we're going to be benefiting from this. There was no testimony like that whatsoever. The testimony was very harmonious with the concepts of a limited and defined and enumerated general government that was given very few powers, and only those few powers it was delegated was its supreme. And as we go through this, I want you to think about the paradigms today. I get fed up when I hear supposedly conservative champions like Liz Cheney talking about, you know, they want to expand, you know, unconstitutional health care for everybody and cancel private insurance that's a part of our unconstitutional health care. And they're complaining about it. The fact of the matter is they should be complaining about the fact that they are exercising a power that they have no authority to exercise. So as we get into this, I hope, one, there's no doubt in my mind, you are going to learn who said what and how they said it, and you're going to understand just how tight and how defined the federal government is within this contract. It's not a coincidence. This is not some, you know, happenstance. I believe that this was all done by the divine hand of providence to give us a contract that the states were the stakeholders, and that they covered everything necessary to define the scope that the federal government was supposed to stay within and the few things that they were supposed to exercise, and that was it. So how did we get so far out of whack? Now, when you talk to constitutional academics like the good Dr. Vile, well, I mean, there was these compromises. That's politics. And so, you know what? Show me in the Constitution where there is an allowance or an enumerated power of compromise. Well, if the two parties or the four parties, whatever, it doesn't matter, that are in Congress at the time, they kind of compromise that they can do this to you, doesn't make it legal. It doesn't make it constitutional. What it means is that they're using tyrannical government. So, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And We want you to know that you can support the content on this show, and you can support the movement of this of what we're doing with Reclaiming the Republic, not just the show. We've got a lot of things that we're cooking. 2020 is going to be a make or break year. And I don't know, maybe it's the messenger. I don't know. We'll see if we fail. We will see if we do not get you and other good patriots engaged and moving. It comes down to that. Because if we don't, then we will probably see the Constitution, or we will probably see compromise by the parties as they get ready to set aside your Constitution. You might see me in the headline news, you know, at the 5 o'clock headline news as the guy that's being tried for treason, because I'm actually demanding that we follow the Constitution. And nobody is there to say, hold it, this guy's right. Anyway, let me move on. There's ways you can support us. It is with Red State Coffee. You can get your grinds on. You can get your beans on. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and get your Red State Coffee. If you like what you drink, or if you don't like what you drink, send us a voicemail by just dialing 425-270-5416. That way you can actually say, hey, I've tried this, and this is actually really good coffee. We would love to have your help in endorsing our product. So, again, 425-270-5416. Now, if you want to support us even more significantly, we have our crowdfunding. You can write a blank check. Actually, you can't with GoFundMe. You have to be very specific of how much you're going to spend. But if you want to support us, that's one way to do it as well. We're only looking to... I've got a trip coming up in next month. I'll be going out to Wyoming again, and I haven't even put up the second trip because we haven't even made money for the first trip. We need your help. We need to get out to Wyoming. We need to start having these meetings. We need to be face-to-face with people. So if you want to help, that's one way to do it. Even more importantly, we need people to do some work. We need people to roll up their sleeves and say, I'm going to get involved. I'm done. I am going to be a part of the solution and no longer a part of the problem. So with that, send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and that's one way you can get involved. Now, let me just dive forward because I don't want to go through all the rest of the obligatories. What we're covering today are the extracts from the Massachusetts. I'm not going to read the entire Massachusetts debates. I don't know how many pages that is, but what I'm looking at is several pages anyway. And I just want to start bringing some of these highlights out so you can hear what these individuals were testifying. And so this is General Brooks of Lincoln. And his first, one of his comments was, it was therefore, he said, impossible that the state governments should be annihilated by the general government. And it was, he said, strongly implied that the part of the section under debate, which was Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, which gave Congress power to exercise exclusive jurisdiction over the federal town, that they shall have it over no other place. Now, this is big because too many people have looked at the Congress shall have exclusive power in Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, and most people just completely gloss over the reality or the fact of precisely what that means. So what does it actually state? It says to exercise, this is subsection 17, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 mile square as may. And then it goes by, you know, other clauses and so forth. But it is limited to D.C. So when they create an act, if it's not amended to the Constitution, it is not applicable to the states. That's why I tell you the ADA, the Civil Rights Act, all of these different acts are not applicable to the states. Just the same thing as the Sedition Act. what should have happened by Madison. I'm surprised Jefferson didn't point this out, that it was violating Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, that they were trying to apply a law that was only legitimate for the District of Columbia, the seat of government. Now, Reverend Mr. Stillman, and he's said some pretty profound things, and so this is one of his comments here. And they go over this, and they go over this to ad nauseum, and what this is what he says. The powers that are granted to Congress by this instrument, he's talking about the Constitution, are great and extensive. But, and I'm telling you, in context of what government does today, they're very limited and defined and minute. What the federal government can do today is very limited, defined, and minute. And what they were looking at was that the powers that are granted to Congress by this instrument are great and he considered them great and extensive because they were given these powers. But sir, they are defined and limited. I'm quoting him here. And in my judgment, sufficiently checked, which I shall prove before I sit down. These powers have been the subject of long and ingenuous debate. Because these folks, my friends, were so jealous of this federal government standing up and getting power, they wanted to make sure exactly what powers they really had and what they didn't have, because they were not about to give the general government all this unlimited power. They wanted to make sure they kept it in check and in control. After these two promos, we'll be right back with what he said. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so what he's basically saying is that, hey, you know, there is this limited and defined general government, and he's going to prove before he sits down just how limited and defined they are. And what you're going to find in some of these things he's going to state is, you know, eye-popping, okay? And he says, but the arguments, after he says, before I sit down, the powers have been the subject of long and ingenuous debate, but the arguments that have been made use of against delegating these powers to the general government prove too much, being applicable to all delegated powers. I mean, the possible abuse of it.
The very term government implies a supreme controlling power somewhere, a power to coerce. Whenever coercion shall be necessary, of what necessity government must judge. This is admitted, if so, the power may be abused. Every gentleman must confess that we cannot give a power to do good, but it may be abused to do evil. If a merchant commits the care of a ship and cargo to the master, he may dispose of both and appropriate the money to his own use. If we raise a body of men and put arms into their hands for our defense, they may turn them against us and destroy us. All these things prove, however, that in order to guard as much as possible against the abuses of those powers we delegate to government, there ought to be sufficient checks on them. Every precaution should be used to secure the liberties of the people on the one hand and not render government inefficient on the other. So in other words, you got to have them in control and in check. And then on the other side, you kind of have to give them the ability to do what they're supposed to do. You hear these anarchists, or I call them libertarians, or they call themselves libertarians. Taxation is theft. Taxation is theft. No, taxation is not theft because we do have a need for government. And a lot of these people want such little government that America would become a third world nation if these people truly had. They don't understand the consequences of what they're really saying. So anyway, let me move on. The abuse of those powers we delegate to government, there ought to be sufficient checks on them. Every precaution should be used to secure the liberties of the people on the one hand and render inefficient on the other. I believe, sir, such security is provided in this Constitution. If not, no consideration shall induce me to give my voice in its favor. But the people are secured by the circumstances. And now he starts listing these things. First, all the offices in Congress are elective, not hereditary. The president and senators are to be chosen by the interposition of legislatures of the several states, who are the representatives and guardians of the people, whose honor and interest will lead them in all humanity. So do you notice he said that only Congress was elected? Or I should say, the House of Representatives was elected. The Senate and the president were not elected. They were basically chosen by electors. And in this particular case, the people would vote for the Electoral College, a different individual than our actual legislatures. But if they come they come to the table and they vote a tie, then the state legislatures, not the state legislatures, but Congress actually takes over. And then Congress decides who becomes the president out of those that are in the field. Anyway, the second issue he brings up is the representatives in Congress are to be chosen every second year. Now, when he says Congress, he means the House of Representatives, by the people of the several states. Consequently, it lies with the people themselves to say who shall represent them. It will then be their own fault if they do not choose the best men in their commonwealth. So, like if you look at California and they're choosing Nancy Pelosi. Well, of course, they're obviously not choosing the best man or woman in that particular republic. And the bottom line is, who do you blame? You have to, whatever slap, these constituents, these electorates. So anyway, who are Congress then? They are ourselves, the men of our own choice, in whom we can confide, whose interest is inseparably connected with our own. Why is it then the gentlemen speak of Congress as some foreign body, as a set of men who will seek every opportunity to enslave us? Such insinuations are repugnant to the spirit of the Constitution. I would even go further and say are repugnant to the Republican form of government that we have. but a worthy gentleman from Middleborough who told us that though they may be good men, when chosen, they may become corrupt. They may so, nor is it in the power of angels or men to prevent it. But should this be the case, the Constitution has made provisions for such an event. When it happens, we shall all know what method to adopt in order to bring them to punishment. In all governments where offices are elective, there ever has been and there ever will be a competition of interests. They who are in office wish to keep in, and they who are out to get in, the probable consequences of which will be that they who are already in place will be attentive to the rights of the people because they know that they are dependent on them for a future election, which can be secured by good behavior only. Besides, they who are out of office will watch them who are in with a most critical eye in order to discover and expose their malconduct, if guilty of any, that so they may step into their places. Every gentleman knows the influence that a desire to obtain a place or the fear of losing it hath on mankind. Mr. Bourke tells us that towards the close of the 7 years for which the representatives are chosen in the British Parliament, they become exceedingly polite to the people. Why? Because they know there is an approaching election depending. This competition of interest, therefore, between those persons who are in and those who are out of office will ever form one important check to the abuse of power in our representatives. Third, here's the third reason. Every 2 years, there will be a revolution in the general government in favor of the people at the expiration of the first two. There will be a new choice of representatives at the expiration of the second 2 years. There will be a new choice of president and representatives at the expiration of the third term, making 6 years from the commencement of Congress. There will be a new choice of senators and representatives. We all know, sir, that the power thus frequently reverting to the people will prove a security to the liberties and most important checks to the power of the general government. Fourth, Congress can make no laws that will oppress the people which will not equally involve themselves in oppression. Now see, I want you to understand what he just said. He just said that Congress can't pass a law that excuses them. That's what they did with Obamacare. That's what they do with a lot of laws now. So how did this happen? And if people say, well, you know, there's nothing in the Constitution that says they can't do this. Guess what, my friends? I just read it. This is a legally binding statement. And this isn't the only one. When we get into the other ratification debates, this will surface. You will find that there is harmony amongst the states, that they are not electing kings and queens, princesses and princes. They are electing servants of the people who are not above the laws that they put and oppress upon the people. And so what possible motive then can Congress, I'm going back to what he's saying after, you know, that they will be equally involved themselves in the oppression. What possible motive then can Congress have to abuse their power? Can any man suppose that they will be so lost to their own interest? Now, so let's think about this. How did Congress get to this level of above the law where they don't have to submit themselves? How did they get there? Well, nobody knew this. Nobody understood the terms of the contract as it was defined in Massachusetts here. And somebody should have stood up and said, when they started doing this, started voting for their own pay raises, when they started creating their own benefits and so forth, somebody should have stood up and said, hey, hold it, you can't do that. Because it was clearly defined in the Massachusetts ratification debate and in the Virginia ratification debate and the Pennsylvania ratification, all these different ratification debates. that you cannot do this. You cannot put yourself, you cannot pass a law and exempt yourself from it. So anyway, moving on. Knowing at the same time that they equally involve themselves in the difficulty, it is most improbable supposition. This would be like a man cutting off his nose to spite his face. I place this, sir, among the securities of liberties of my fellow citizens and rejoice in it. Well, until they got away with actually not having to be submitted to those same standards where they became above the law. When we come back, we'll get with the fifth and sixth and seventh arguments from from good old Mr. Stillman, actually Reverend Stillman. So we will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so as we get into this fifth argument, I think you'll find this interesting because this kind of goes along the line of what we're facing today with invasions and so forth. Fifth. Congress guarantee to every state in the Union a republican form of government and engage to protect them against all foreign and domestic enemies. That is, as it hath been justly observed by the honorable gentleman, Mr. Adams, which is, which Adams? Samuel Adams, not John Adams. Near me, so like you said, he's right here, then they inserted, whoever wrote this inserted Mr. Adams, of known and tried abilities as a politician, each state shall choose such republican form of government as they please. Not democratic, but republican. What is a republican form of government? A government that is representative of the bodies of interests or constituents within the state. And who are those? The people? And the counties. And so they can choose to have, you know, the size of representation and, you know, however they please to do that. If you look at New Hampshire, they have, I think they have like 500 representatives and senators. Vermont might be another one. But in some of those states, those people work for free. I think Vermont or one of them that has a lot, those guys work for free. Anyway, this is an admirable security of the people at large, as well as of the several governments of the states. Consequently, the general government cannot swallow up the local governments, as some gentlemen have suggested. Their existence is dependent on each other and must stand or fall together. Should Congress ever attempt the destruction of a particular legislature, they would be in the same predicament with Samson, who overthrew the house which the Philistines were making sport at his expense. He then killed, indeed, but he buried himself in the ruins. And so, sixth argument, another check in favor of the people is this: that the Constitution provides for the impeachment trial and punishment of every officer in Congress. They don't even hold this anymore. This needs to be changed to where the people of the states should be able to impeach. I honestly believe the states should be able to impeach their own representatives. Don't know why they didn't include that. Who shall be guilty of malconduct with such a prospect, who will dare to abuse the powers vested in him by the people? Seventh, having thus considered several of the checks to the powers of Congress, which are interwoven with the Constitution, we will now suppose the worst they can take place in consequence of its adoption. I mean, that it shall be found in some of its parts oppressive to the people. Still, we have this genuine resort. It may be amended. In other words, this problem here, the Constitution actually can be amended. It is not, like the laws of the Medes and the Persians, immutable. The fifth article provides for amendments. It has been said it will be difficult after its ratification to procure any alterations. By no means, sir, for this weighty reason. It is a general government and, as such, will have a general influence. All states in the Union will feel the difficulty and, feeling it, will readily concur in adopting the method provided by the Constitution. And having once made the trial, experience will teach us what amendments are necessary. Viewing the Constitution in this light, I stand ready to give my vote for it, without any amendments at all. Yet, if the amendments proposed by Your Excellency, and he's talking about John Hancock, who's also in this meeting, will attend to conciliation, I readily admit them, not as a condition of acceptance, but as a matter of recommendation only. Knowing that blessed are the peacemakers, I am ready, sir, to submit my life, my liberty, my family, my property, and as far as my vote go, the interest of my constituents to this general government. After all, if this Constitution was as perfect as the sacred volume is, it would not secure the liberties of the people unless they watch their own liberties. Nothing written on paper will do this. It is therefore necessary that the people should keep a watchful, not an over-jealous eye on their rulers, and that they should give all due encouragement to our colleges, schools of learning, and etc., so that knowledge may be diffused through every part of our country. Ignorance and slavery, knowledge and freedom are inseparably connected. While Americans remain in their present enlightened condition and warmly attached to the cause of liberty, they cannot be enslaved. Should the general government become so lost to all sense of honor and the freedom of the people as to attempt to enslave them, this is important here, they who are descendants of a race of men who have dethroned kings, who make an American Congress tremble, strip them of their public honors, and reduce them to the lowest state of degradation. That's what we need to do. But actually, we don't really have to do this, because if Mr. Stillman understood what was being said and what was in that Constitution, we have all the powers necessary to force compliance. Those who want to stand in our way can be removed and banned, because he didn't know that the 14th Amendment, which would be coming down several decades later, would include a section that gives the states and governments the power to ban people from public service, period. All forms of public service. Now, so this next comment or testimony is by John Hancock, the one and only. And this is what he says. When the convention met in the afternoon, His Excellency, the President, and actually these are the words of those who were keeping record, right? Observed that a motion had been made and seconded that this convention do assent to and ratify the Constitution, which had been under consideration, and that he had, in the former part of the day, intimated, that's what it is. He intimated his intention of submitting a proposition to the convention. My motive, he says, arises from my earnest desire to this convention, my fellow citizens, and the public at large, that this convention may adopt such a form of government as may extend its good influence to every part of the United States and advance the prosperity of the whole world. His situation, His Excellency said, had not permitted him to enter into the debates of this convention. It, however, appeared to him necessary, from what he had been advanced in them, to adopt the form of government proposed, but observing a diversity of sentiment in the gentlemen of the convention, he had frequently had conversations with them on the subject, and from this conversation he was induced to propose them whether the induction of some general amendments would not be attended with the happiest consequences. For that purpose, he should, with the leave of the Honorable Convention, submit to their consideration a proposition in order to remove the doubts and quiet the apprehensions of gentlemen, and if any degree and object, the object should be acquired, let me repeat this, if in any degree the object should be acquired, he should feel himself perfectly satisfied. He should therefore submit them, for he was, he said, unable to go more largely into the subject in its abilities would permit him, relying on the candor of the convention to bear him witness that his wishes for a good constitution were sincere. His Excellency then read his proposition. This gentleman concluded His Excellency in the proposition which I make and I submit to you for your consideration, with the sincere wish that it may have a tendency to promote a spirit of union. Now, then he goes, like I said, then he, or like they said, he goes into what these amendments are that he would like to see in this new constitution. This is really important, and this is only historically important for this very particular reason, because this was the first state that actually changed their position on the Constitution from just a simple yes or no to a, yeah, we're actually, you know, we're ratifying this, we're buying into this, but let it be known that we believe that these are the amendments that need to be put passed. And we believe that if you don't do something about this, we will go down the path of petitioning the states, informing a convention of states if necessary. And what ended up happening was Madison made sure that the Bill of Rights got passed so that they never had to convene a convention to amend the Constitution. So with that, We're going into another break, and we're going to come back with Samuel Adams and his reply to John Hancock. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we're jumping into Samuel Adams, and this is what he says. Your Excellency, first proposition is, and then he starts reading. And, you know, you hear all these things. It's almost like these guys were licking each other's boots, but they were very, very... I pointed out to somebody just the other day that they did not use, you know, God, Jesus, the Lord, or what have you, for referencing, you know, the Creator. What they did was they referred to him as the divine hand of providence, because they were afraid of using the deity, the actual words, names, or what have you. So they, because they understand that thou shalt not take the Lord thy God's name in vain, that very particular commandment. And so they were, if you want to call it politically correct, yeah, okay. They were very guarded in how they addressed each other. You got to also remember, you say something to piss somebody off, well, you could be finding yourself, instead of going to lunch after your discussion and, you know, political forum, you could be going out to the park for, you know, a breath of fresh air, and maybe being your last, because you'll be in a duel after, you know, somebody is out there to defend their honor because you besmirch them. Anyway, so Samuel Adams says, Your Excellency's first proposition is that it be explicitly declared that all powers not expressly delegated to Congress are reserved to the states to be by them exercised. This appears to my mind in a summary of a Bill of Rights, which gentlemen are anxious to obtain. It removes a doubt which many have entertained respecting the matter, and gives assurance that if any law be made by the federal government, shall be extended beyond the power granted by the proposed Constitution, and inconsistent with the Constitution of this state, it will be in error and adjudged by the courts of a law to be void. Now, I've said this before. How many times have you actually heard the term, and I, you know, this was common knowledge. This was a common application. And so when somebody actually looks at a law that violates the Constitution of the state, then it is considered an error and void. Remember, we talked about this with nullification. You don't have to, you know, say, well, we think this ought to be. It is. It's just a no-brainer. They just say, hey, this is an error with this, by this and this and this, and it's void. It wasn't an act of standing up and saying, we are nullifying it. They just say it is nullified. So that's why this is one of the key arguments here. Jefferson and Madison were not trying to nullify. They were nullified by clearly pointing out how they were in error. They were nullified. They weren't trying. And they're not saying, states, you got to. This is the this is the standard. It's immutable. It is how this is. So anyway, let me move on. It is consonant with the second article in the present Confederation that each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States and Congress assembled. I have long considered the watchfulness of the people over the conduct of their rulers the strongest guard against the encroachments of power, and I hope the people of this country will always be thus watchful. Samuel Adams. And so that's one of the things that we just haven't been doing. We just have not been so watchful. Now, Reverend Thatcher stood up and said, with respect to the first of these considerations, I trust there is no man in his sense but what will own that the whole country hath largely felt the want of energy in the general government. While we were at war with Britain, common danger produced a common union. But the cause being removed, the effect ceased also. Nay, I do not know, but we may safely add that that union produced by uniform danger was still inadequate to general and national purposes. This commonwealth, with a generous, disinterested regard to the good of the whole, appeared foremost in the day of danger. At the conclusion of the late war, 2/3 of the Continental Army were from Massachusetts. Wow, just digest that right there. 2/3 of the Continental Army were from Massachusetts at the conclusion of the Revolutionary War. Okay? Their provisions and their clothing proceeded also in a great measure from our extraordinary exertions. In other words, they were probably the primary providers for food, for food, clothes, munitions, and so forth. The people did this in the fullest confidence that when peace and tranquility were restored from the honor and justice of our sister states, our supernumerary expenses would be abundantly repaid. But alas, how much hath our expectations been blasted? The Congress, though willing, yet had no power to do us justice. The small district of Rhode Island put a negative upon the collected wisdom of the continent. This was done not by those who are patrons of their present infamous system of paper currency, but by the part of them who now call themselves honest men. We have made exertions to stop the importation of foreign luxuries. Our brethren in the neighboring states, from the view of local advantages, have taken occasion to distress us upon the same account. They have encouraged where we have prohibited, and by those iniquitous measures have made our virtue and public spirit an additional cause of our calamity. Nor have our calamities been local. They have reached to all parts of the United States and have produced dissipations and what is this? Indigence? Yeah, indigence at home. So indigence, not having. The indigent, people that are living on the streets that have no means. So indigence at home. Interesting that he included that, because I guess that came from the Shea Rebellion, because they were already strapped so hard that they didn't have any more. So that the oppressive Massachusetts government at the time literally started, you know, wanting a pound of flesh if you didn't have a pound of potatoes. Anyway, indigenous at home and contempt in foreign countries. On the one hand, the haughty Spaniard has deprived us of the navigation of the River of Mississippi. On the other, the British nation are, by extravagant duties, ruining our fisheries. Our sailors are enslaved by the pirates of Algiers. Our credit is reduced to so low an ebb, and American faith is proverbial expression for perfidy. Now, I would have to look that up, but anyway, as Punic faith was among the Romans, thus we have suffered every species of infamy abroad and poverty at home. Such, in fact, have been our calamities as are enough to convince the most skeptical among us of the want of a general government in which energy and vigor should be established at the same time the rights and liberties of the people preserved. A constitution has been presented to us which was composed and planned by men who, in the council and field, have, in the most conspicuous offices, served their country in the late war. It comes authenticated by a man without any pecuniary reward, commanded our army, he's talking about Washington, and who retired to a private station with more pleasure than he left it. I do not say, Mr. President, that this proves the form of government to be perfect, or that it is an unanswerable argument that we should adopt it, but it is reason why we should examine it with care and caution, and that we ought not rashly be precipitately to reject it. It will be objected, there are more powers granted than are necessary, and that it tends to destroy the local governments of particular states, and that it will eventually end either in aristocracy or despotism. To answer the objection, two considerations should be taken into view: the situation of the continent when a constitution was formed, and the impossibility of preserving a perfect sovereignty in the states after necessary powers were ceded to a supreme council of the whole, which was the Continental Congress. As to the first, let us candidly examine the state of these republics from New Hampshire to Georgia, and see how far vigor and energy were required during the session of this late convention. Massachusetts was on the point of civil war. In Vermont and New Hampshire, a great disaffection to their several governments prevailed among the people. New York absolutely refused complying with... So we're going to come back and we're going to cover from New York going on. And, I can just tell you, Mr. Thatcher is hitting it out of the park here. They definitely did not want to just blindly jump into this. And they're talking about what this all means. And that's why it's so important. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And we will be back. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.